Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast, where tech gets a little tantalising. We're here to unbox the latest and greatest, spill the secrets tech giants don't want you to know, and maybe, just maybe, have a little bit of fun along the way.
Oh, we've got to have fun along the way. We've got to. That is definitely on the agenda. I'm Jason Bradbury. Great to see you. Buckle up for some seriously smart and occasionally naughty banter as we dive deep. That's what we wrote. It felt like a good idea at the time. As we dive deep into gadget land with enough gusto to keep you entertained and plugged in.
All right, before we get tucked in though, let's give a little bit of love to the JBL Tour Pro 3s. Here are mine. I've got my cat on there, look.
Good. So if you're listening, Susie's referring to the case of the Tour Pro 3s, which you can put images on, and you can also interact with various cool functions.
Yeah, exactly. And we've been using them over the last few weeks. I've been around the world a couple of times.
Like you do.
Yeah, as you do. And you've been, you know, not around the world.
No, but I tell you, one of the functions I do like about them is you can connect the case via USB-C to your computer, in my case, the sort of desktop in my studio. And then I can have the earbuds in wirelessly, but receiving sound from, you know, from the computer. In fact, I could use the mic on them as well, but via the same wireless functionality.
It's very cool. I've been loving them on the planes with the noise cancellation. That's been fantastic for me. But if you want to know more about them, don't forget, John has done a fantastic deep dive on YouTube. So have a look at that. You won't be disappointed.
Yep.
Let's get on with the show.
Let's do it.
So this week, we've got a tech graveyard of some of the gadgets that disappeared without a trace, but realistically should have taken the world by storm. We're chatting toys with our resident toyologist, Pete Jenkinson. And for the gadget of interest, we've got Samsung's Galaxy Tab S10 Ultra, a powerhouse of a tablet that's big on performance.
I love it. Super, super excited to check all of that stuff out. Firstly, though, it's time to go through some of the comments and questions from our lovely viewers and listeners.
Okay, that's a good idea.
This one is from, it says The Missing Link, the name, but they're using fives and threes instead of E's and S's, if that makes sense. And this is from YouTube. I love having you guys back. I can't believe I've only just found this. We get a lot of that, don't we? My question is, although GoPro have been the leader in the action camera field for years, do you not feel they've become a little stagnant and allowed companies like Insta360 and DJI to catch on or catch up and in some cases surpass them?
I wonder whether it was an inevitability though, really, because they were the market leaders and they came up, you know, as we started the Gadget Show, we were using their
little silver one. Yeah.
And we loved it and we used to stick it on absolutely everything. I suppose there is an inevitability that, you know, competitors are going to come in and pinch and catch up, really, and start to take the market share.
Yeah, I think so it's really interesting. I also think as well, you know, there is no inevitability about a market, is there? Sometimes when you saturate a market, you actually end up giving yourself nowhere to go. It's very interesting. And I think everyone that requires that sort of technology has kind of got a solution.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say, just quickly, is that the Insta360 X4... the X3 is great, but the X4, that's an incredible piece of technology. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable what you can do with that now. So I would say that of the two contenders, DJI and Insta360, the X4 from Insta360 does offer, it's diversified the market. It offers a very different technology and an amazing piece of technology. I love it.
And I suppose you get to the point where you're like, what else can they add? What else can they improve? Well, if I asked you that question, what would you say?
Well, it goes from 4K to 8K. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's interesting. We have reached a bit of a ceiling, haven't we? Mm. In fact, what are they all doing? Like, they must all be sitting around, like the likes of LG and Sony and all the other kind of screen manufacturers saying, well, I don't know. I don't see people buying 8K, do you? I can't really, if I'm honest, when I go into the showrooms and I look at the kind of 8K displays, because that's the only place that I get to see them. I could never afford one at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't know really what I'm getting for that.
The difference
jump.
Isn't Four, such a yeah. big jump. 4K to the is inc- eye.
Yeah, incredible, absolutely incredible, and you know all the OLEDs and the multi-layered OLEDs and all the rest of it. And ultimately, that's what these devices are serving, aren't they? So I would say that maybe a surround element, higher resolution, as you kind of you know, do your 360. Maybe less. There is a bit of an aberration around the edges of those 360 degree cameras. Sometimes when you pull out, say, a 1080p or a 4K 16:9 section from something that was originally shot 360, it's not. There's a little bit of
lack of quality.
Yeah, the lack of there's a curvature around the outside. You know, there's so maybe an improvement of that sort of quality.
But we're getting to that point where it is saturation. So he's right, really. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Missing link. One from Soundwave on YouTube, Soundwave 1 of 9. Good, genuine question. Why are you two wearing earphones when you're sat across the desk from each other? I totally understand why you're asking that question, but it's an immersive thing. And if you look at any radio DJs or, well, in terms of when you've actually got a radio desk, you're listening to other things as well that you're going to bring in later.
Yeah.
We're not doing that here. We're genuinely just listening to each other. But I think both of us wear them because when you can hear yourself back, you feel like you're within the program. If you can't hear yourself back, it's quite distracting, actually. It's a strange thing to explain.
Yeah, you need to experience it. But I've just taken them off, obviously, to make the point. And I'm now really aware of the rest of the room.
Yeah.
I'm aware of the team that we've got working with us. And my voice bouncing off the walls, whereas as soon as I put the headphones back in, it's just me and Susie.
Yeah.
And that adds to an intimacy that ultimately, I think, translates in the quality of the broadcast.
Yeah, so it's immersion and intimacy, I think, is the answer to that.
I said broadcast. It's not a broadcast. I'm so old school. The quality of the podcast.
Thank you. Do you want to do the next one?
Yeah, okay. This is from Technology Workshop. Which is written normally, except there's no O in the workshop. Being a Sony repair guy from the 80s, I love you already, it made me smile that at least someone still thinks that's cool. It is cool. It seems literally nobody wants anything repaired anymore. People just throw everything in the tip and then grump about having to buy another off eBay. Companies don't have repair centres anymore either. It's just smashed and ground up. It's all going to be gone one day. Get it repaired, people. Interestingly, I love this. It's so postmodern. We have features now that were just normal stuff by necessity 20 years ago. And I'll give you an example. Scarcity. So you'll get something released now, and there's only a few hundred available or a few thousand available. They could make as many as they want, but they're holding it back because scarcity breeds interest and you know, there's a kind of culture, there's a rarity around it.
It creates a need. It
creates a need, right?
A want, anyway.
Yes, a want. And then there's another thing, a feature, which is that you can upgrade this or you can repair it. And mobile phones have gone down that route, haven't they? There's a great handset that you can buy, which you can get into with... it's called the Fairphone. Fairphone. And you can get in there. You get a screwdriver with the phone. And you can get in there. And after a year, you can unscrew the back very easily, and you can you can unclip the back, and then you can unscrew the camera module, and you can upgrade with the latest module rather than spending £1,000 or £500 on a brand new handset,
and everything going into landfill, which is just ludicrous. I mean, the technology world has to take responsibility for, you know, the amount of stuff that's going into
it's
the ground.
Absolutely appalling. And we're talking about some very toxic materials and very precious metals. Yep. That require a complex process to, you know, unseat from their
I wonder how you get
gadget
that.
State.
Because if you look back a generation, and even our generation, really, we would repair things. We would sew things, just anything in life, really. Stitch things up if the case. Don't chuck them away just because the hems come down. I mean, the amount of people that can't do basic fixing now, it's tragic. I wonder how you can go back to basics. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, a lot of YouTube
channels.
It's
education. Well, yeah, it's education, you know, isn't it?
Yeah, they...
And a pride, really, in what you own, rather than it being everything disposable. I hate it. I hate the fact
I think it's a really bad trend. I was going to say, a lot of YouTube channels now actually ply their fare based on the fact that they mend stuff and they build stuff. So, you know, with regard to me going down the tip and saving old tech, I think maybe there's a bit of a trend there. We should be doing it.
I think
doing much more of it.
Yeah, teach your kids to
Don't
repair
you think?
Stuff. Oh, I love it. Final one then. PHX Renegade on YouTube. Another great show, thank you. You are most welcome. As a 55-year-old gamer...
Oh, so he's young then.
Yeah. I have to say, I love being in VR. The Quest 3, with its pass-through and mixed reality functions, is a massive step up from the Quest 2. Now we need more FOV, and I'll be one happy OAP.
What a nice use of acronyms.
You're not an OAP.
I like it.
You're not an OAP, you're only 55.
No.
That's in the sort of saga. We can all do saga holiday. And I can't believe I'm saying it.
Don't go there. I'm feeling really uncomfortable. Field of view is what PHX Renegade is referring to. And I agree, we need to broaden that. So what's interesting is we leap forward in terms of resolution. Often the field of view kind of, you know, either gets smaller or stays the same. And then the next iteration will be the same resolution that you had last year, but with a wider field of view. We're getting to the point when it's going to be absolutely fully immersive, and I cannot wait.
Right, thank you so much for all your wonderful comments. Keep them coming. Right, should we move on?
Let's do it.
Right, Jace, do you remember a few weeks ago when we had Otis joining us and he was discussing some terrible gadgets for our wall of shame?
Yeah.
Right. Well, it got me thinking about the tech that died a quick death, but realistically should have been on our wall of fame.
Oh, nice.
Right, so I thought we could run through some of the contenders and put it to our listeners and viewers and see if they agree.
Yep.
Right. Right. Okay, what do you think?
I've got a contender.
Go on then.
All right, the Atari Jaguar. Ooh. Now, this is interesting because, you know, despite being several years ahead of the other sort of notable 64-bit gaming console, the N64 from Nintendo, it wasn't a success in North America. A little bit more successful further afield. It failed based on a poor game library. I think it's fair to say poor marketing. And actually, I think this is unarguable, one of the most confusing controllers ever designed. Although I've got to be careful because being a retro gaming freak myself, I know that a lot of the community have a lot of love for the Atari Jaguar, me included. So just bear with me, folks, right? So it came out in 1993, all right, in the States, 1994. This is how OG I am. When I say 1994, I think, wow, that's quite recent then.
Oh, no. It
featured a 32-bit... Oh, my God. 32-bit Motorola 68,000 CPU as the main processor. You might be thinking, wow, Jace is really knowledgeable. I've actually got it written in front of me. Paired with two custom 32/64-bit co-processors called Tom and Jerry.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I didn't know that. That's
I didn't
interesting,
know that
isn't
either.
It? Despite being marketed, though, as a 64-bit console, most of its functionality, you know, if we're being honest, relied on the 32-bit CPU. Let's dispense with the tech spec lowdown.
Yeah.
Right? Let's talk about the games because ultimately, you know, that's
why you think it should be on the Hall of Fame.
Yes, because Rayman on the Jaguar was ace. Absolutely brilliant. And there were other notable titles.
What was it that made it so good, though, do you think?
Well, because it was a revolutionary graphical experience for the time. This is all of these things sit in a time and space, and if we look back, they look sort of vintage and cute. Mm. But actually,
at the time,
well, yeah. I mean, imagine the Atari 2600, right? Mm. Half the graphical quality of an Atari 2600 game in like 1979 or whatever, right? Was you imagining the box art, sort of overlaid in your mind on the very, very rudimentary graphics that you actually got to play with, right? Something like the Atari Jaguar actually delivered on the promise of next generation graphics for games like, you know, Wolfenstein 3D or Alien vs. Predator. That was one of the other titles that was successful in its lineup. Held back, though, I've got to say, by the ergonomics of the controller. Really confusing controller design.
So that probably was the main reason then.
Yeah. I think the reason that I want to shift this into fame rather than shame territory is just because looking back, I have such affection for it. And I know that a lot of the retro gaming community do. It's quite funny. I used to do an online show with a really prominent retro gaming person. And it was quite funny. It was like an in-joke because everyone in chat, they would argue about that they either loved it or they hated it. It's a really divisive console.
Are you going to name this person?
Yes, Bex, a.k.a. Trista Bytes. Okay. And she loved the Atari Jaguar. And then the 50% of chat that didn't would always like lambast her. You know, it was really funny. It was like a fun a fun...
But you never leave the school playground, debate. Do you, really, when you put your head on the block?
Yeah, it's very much a school playground divider, this one. Very much so.
Okay, what about the Xbox Kinect?
Oh, I'm so pleased you mentioned that. Spelt with a K.
Yeah.
Okay, so I remember getting a rather mysterious invitation to go to America for the unveiling of a mysterious new thing. And I went along...
Was it on a private island, was it?
No, it wasn't. And there were no private aeroplanes. The man behind the camera apparently was with me. And I feel slightly rude... for not knowing that. So me and Tom, who is our producer, and he's absolutely smashing, were invited to go. Had no idea what it was about. And we ended up in a basketball arena somewhere like Seattle or LA or somewhere. I can't remember where it was. I mean, it was massive. Given, wait for this, a poncho. I was given a poncho. I think it was probably in like Xbox Green. And everyone I sat in this arena... And there were all these actors and performers, like circus, doing circus stuff, where the basketball net would be. It had all been made into a big set, right?
Are you sure you haven't been smoking?
No, honestly, just listen to me. This happened. In my poncho, so there's thousands of us in these bloody ponchos looking like aliens, right? The lights go down. There's this big display. All the ponchos light up that we're wearing. We're all like part of this interactive kind of kinetic sort of experience, right? And it's the launch of Kinect. And we're doing wavy arms and stuff, and these performers are flinging about on, you know, bits of rope and that. And it was the launch of the Kinect. And so I was very much hook, line, and sinker on board with the Kinect and my Xbox 360. And I got, you know, I got served it by Microsoft and, Jace, take this. And I was there. And I did all my dancing games and all the rest of it. And I was actually a fan. Little did I know that everyone else absolutely hated it.
So was that E3 in 2010?
Like I know things like that? I think it was probably an E3 event, yeah.
Well, it was released
related
in November 2010.
Okay.
That was the launch date for Kinect for Xbox 360. Obviously, the motion sensing peripheral for the Xbox 360, and it did have incredible potential.
Yeah.
Didn't it really? Now
it kind of scanned your body, didn't it? And you were like, it was like infrared matrix. And then as you moved,
so you didn't
you were the controller.
Exactly. Yeah. You became the controller, but it was hindered by a lack of compelling software. I think limited long-term interest maybe as well.
I think so. The dancing game was great. It was called Dance Central, I seem to remember. And I had little ones at the time, I think. Were my kids born?
You would have done 2010.
And... you know, dancing about with mom and dad in the front room. It was absolutely fabulous. But it lacked as an interface, so as a kind of motion capture, if you like, an input, it lacked the precision of what the Wii was doing with the Wiimote.
Yeah, it didn't really have any compelling software outside of that.
No,
it?
They tried. I'm sure there was like a first-person shooter and there were some other titles that they played around with. But I think definitely, sadly, it needs to be this one. It's a shame rather than a fame.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But it just had, you know, it had that 3D depth sensor. It had some good tech, didn't it, attached to it?
Yeah, and I tell you what's interesting about it, Susie. You know, some of the best things that were done with Kinect actually came after the Xbox, when it was used as a peripheral, plugging into PCs, to do things like capture movement in the first faltering days of virtual reality.
Yeah. Because if you look at the field of view as well that they used, they had a 57-degree horizontal and 43-degree vertical field of view, which allowed it to track movement in quite a large area, which was quite new.
Yeah, well, because now we've got very sophisticated accelerometers and all that stuff built into controllers for VR. But I remember a couple of demos coming to the Gadget Show studio. One of them was like this kind of paella pan that you... put these special shoes on and you walked around in it. It enabled you to sprint and run in virtual reality. VR at the time, by the way, that would have been the first generation Oculus headsets, right? And I think it was called Cat VR. I think there's now a product available. But then the way that they interpreted your movement was using a Kinect. It wasn't exactly the Kinect. It was the same hardware
as a USB peripheral. All right, but interesting fact, do you remember that Kinect actually broke records? So they sold 8 million units within the first 60 days, which actually earned them a Guinness World Record as the fastest selling consumer electronics device at the time. And by 2013, it had sold over 24 million units. That's incredible, isn't it?
And yet,
and so you think it was like a nailed-on winner at that point.
Yeah, but all I remember, though, is when they launched the Xbox One, that you were forced to buy it with the Xbox One. And I think the gaming community weren't particularly happy about that, because the Xbox really has always been considered a hardcore gamers kind of platform, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this sort of slightly softer approach to gaming, this whimsical sort of whimsical answer to the Wiimote. I don't know if really people got on board that. I don't know. But that's extraordinary. I didn't realise they'd sold so many.
Yeah.
The one thing I would say is, you get a lot of kind of communities around old tech. So we've talked about the Atari Jaguar. There is an Atari Jaguar, you know, community. The Atari 2600, the same thing, right? The Wii, actually, the same thing. I don't know of one around the Kinect, and I don't know if there's a lot of love for it anymore. But I might be talking out of turn.
No, but it feels like it was a bit corporate, even though obviously it paved the way for technology in the future and AI, etc. You know, it did its fantastic job, but it was discontinued, obviously, in 2017 due to its decline in popularity. But yeah, like I say, it continued to influence other products.
I don't know. It's a difficult one, actually. I really enjoyed my Kinect.
Let's pause it then.
Yeah, but I think I'm in a minority. Tell you what, the audience can decide this one, Susie, because I definitely can't.
Okay, fine. Let us know what you think about the Xbox Kinect. I want to mention HD DVD, which was obviously the competitor to Blu-ray at the time. It's sort of a rematch of Betamax VHS, I think, from the 80s.
Yeah.
And it didn't make it. And it seemed like at the time the sensible thing to do when you've got HD films. So you've got HD DVD, but Blu-ray basically won the battle.
So this is really interesting. I'm really pleased you brought this up, right? Because it's another example. It's a bit like the Kinect. It just shows you the power of consumers and how discerning the end user is, and why we should always listen to the end user, ultimately. When the Goliath that is Microsoft can throw insane amounts of money at something like the Kinect and still fail, and similar sums of money at something like HD DVD and fail. So it came out initially as an external accessory, didn't it, for the Xbox 360? And I remember the articles, I remember getting excited about it and realizing that we had something of a VHS versus Betamax war on our hands, didn't we?
Yeah.
And that I was ringside to see this one play out. Couldn't call it. And I'll tell listeners, while I own several PlayStations of various different eras, I think our household is more an Xbox household than it is a PlayStation household. Just getting that out there, right? And so I was particularly interested in what, you know, the Xbox was going to bring. So I think it was 30 gigs, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Versus, what was the capacity of the Blu-ray?
50.
50 gigs, yeah. And I think for me, That's what did it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, having a Blu-ray as part of whichever generation of PlayStation it was. What was it? The 3, was it? Which one was it that came with the Blu-ray?
Yeah, the 3.
Yeah. Was massively important because, you know, that was a very, very finessed console. It was a big release for them, the PlayStation 3. And so that helped. Mm. I remember most people's first experience of Blu-ray was on their PlayStation 3, right? So that gave a huge, big boost to the release of the Blu-ray format. But ultimately, a Blu-ray is about, for me, it's about getting a high-quality movie experience in HD, or now in 4K, plus the extras, and that's the thing. So the more extras you can pack on your disc, the better value for the consumer. And so 50 gigs versus 30 gigs, well, you know, you can make your own mind up.
Yeah, potentially fantastic technology, but not really backed by the industry.
No, but great though, a sort of modern day Betamax versus VHS.
Yeah, 100%.
So come on, Suze, with your saucy glasses. have you got another one for us?
Oh, okay. I want to mention the Pebble smartwatch.
Yes.
So stay with me. The reason why I want to mention it is because I think it paved the way for the modern market of smartwatches. So it came out, well, it got funded in 2012, Kickstarter.
No.
Came out 2013. So just like, what, 12, 11 years ago. And it had that lovely e-ink display, a really great battery. But it was a proper David and Goliath story, wasn't it?
Because I remember it. I remember the e-ink display. Yeah, and there was a real sort of fervour of interest around it.
Yeah,
there
was.
Revolutionary.
Yeah, it was. And it didn't last. It couldn't fight against the might of Samsung and Apple. And it ended up slipping out of the market, really. But it did pave the way.
But you know what? Even now, I can see myself wearing one because it's kind of vintage cool.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds silly because it's only, whatever you said, 12 years old, whatever it is. I like it. I think that's a great one. And I want to nudge that into the fame category, but that's not up to me. It's up to our listeners, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. Let us know. You've got one last one for
I've got one last one. And wouldn't you know, it's another gaming one. Forgive me, I'm a bit predictable. I want to talk about the Sega Saturn.
Okay.
And the reason is that commercially, I think it's fair to say it wasn't successful. All right, and it was head to head with the PlayStation 1 or the PS1, and that's possibly that's the end of the story because that was arguably
such a giant.
Well, it was just possibly one of the most significant console releases of them all, wasn't it?
Literally a game changer.
And I love my Sega Saturn. I love the controller. I love the games. I seem to remember the Virtua series of titles that were big in the arcades. This was the first time you could play them in your front room. Virtua Cop with a really good gun. That's what I use my Saturn for now. And I absolutely love it. Sega Rally was available for it. There was a game called Nights into Dreams that was absolutely brilliant. Panzer Dragoon.
Yeah.
I'm going just off memory. These aren't in my notes. I have real passion for this console. And I know a lot of other people do. But commercially, it didn't do it.
So it lost out due to market share, presumably.
I think so, yeah.
But the fact that you're still playing it makes me think that it should be a contender for our Wall of Fame.
Well, I mean, these are retro gaming events that I love going to. You know, the Sega Saturn is always there. It's always loved. And there's a big community around them.
It lives on.
It lives on.
So we would like you to decide whether these should be shame or fame. Have you got our list of contenders?
I have, in no particular order. Atari Jaguar. All right. Kinect for the Xbox platform. Pedal smartwatch, we just mentioned. Sega Saturn. And of course, HD DVD.
So there's our list of five contenders. Let us know what you think. Right, time now for our special guest. And we welcome back a man who was here on our very first podcast.
That's right.
Toyologist, ladies and gentlemen, Pete Jenkinson.
Hi, Pete.
Hello, 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 hello.
Great.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, when you bring boxes full of toys, you can come whenever you like.
I think the first time I came, I brought my own boxes, but this time I had deliveries arrived before I'd even arrived here. So we had multiple boxes.
So you're moving in.
Yeah, everybody's loving the Gadget Show podcast, see?
Wow. Well,
we like
we
the
hope
sound
so.
Of that.
Yeah,
yeah. So you're here for to seduce our kidulthood.
Yes,
yeah.
To bring out the kidults in us grown-ups.
And tell us what can be on the Christmas list, I think.
There's plenty on the Christmas list, especially this year. So the market is... 2024 has been incredible for kidults, really. I mean, we've all got a kidult. Some of ours is closer to the surface than others. Some is absolutely broken out and through, and it's all we are. Hello, that's me. but the market now, the toy market in the UK is like barring £3.5 billion. But almost 30% of that, as of numbers released very recently, 29% of toys sold in the UK are sold to adults who are the kidults, or kidults buying them to give to other adults/kidults.
Yeah, so using a child as an excuse, but actually having it for yourself. That's what kidult is.
Definitely as an excuse, or to collaborate with children. It's kind of bringing the family together.
Yeah.
That's why you would buy a Scalectric set that was based on Back to the Future, for example, because you know that your kid wants to play with it.
That is a great idea. So...
so
do I spy that somewhere on the table?
Yeah, so I that did not. So to answer your question, what's like hot on the kidult list this year? So it's a big list, ever growing. But one of amongst my favourites, there's a lot that taps into retro nostalgia.
Yeah.
Because that's what spendy mum and dad want to get their kids into watching the film and talk like little trips down memory lane. We all love that, a bit of collaborative play. what better than Skeletric set? So, one of the most popular Skeletric sets this year is the Back to the Future one that they've launched. But it also comes with Knight Rider. He was never in Back to the Future, clearly. But these cars, the DeLorean has a light-up flux.
So Pete
inside.
Is holding the...
I am holding the
DeLorean time machine up in Skeletric's version. And in his other hand, although Susie's got it now. In fact, I'll grab that. I'll grab Kit to the Knight Rider car.
And Kit has got a light-up front light panel. I'm sure that has a technical name to it, but you know what
is
I'm
it the one that
about.
Strobes left to
the
right?
The strobe at the front.
It's become the kind of international symbol of AI, hasn't it, through the ages?
Yeah.
You know, a kind of strobing light it says that there's something going on in here.
Yeah.
They've attempted to replicate to a degree the characters inside the car, but we won't worry about that too much. I think the detail on the car is pretty good. So you get a standard set with the standard race track set with this, but you know, to add on and make it bigger and bigger, and then people go to town, and you can add your own kind of town square and your own bits from the film.
Great.
And play it while you're watching one of the watching one of the episodes. It's a great way to spend an afternoon.
You can actually watch the movie and race your cars.
So we had dual screening, which was a thing a few years ago. This is dual playing.
Putting lighter fuel.
Analog in full.
Putting lighter fuel on the track.
Yes. So
behind the DeLorean is not advised.
No. What a great idea, though.
But this is my favourite, and I know that it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't, but it looks amazing, and the characters inside do look like the chaps from the Blues Brothers.
She's holding up the car from which movie?
Blues Brothers.
This is from the Blues Brothers. For those of you, Blues Brothers aficionado, if I say to you, it's 106 miles to Chicago, we've got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark and we're wearing sunglasses. You'll know
class.
This is one of my favourite movies, but you can get the Blues Brothers car to go on your Skeletric track, which is fantastic.
It's beautifully detailed as well, Susie.
It is.
Yeah,
it's kind of aged and worn like the original.
Like me.
Absolutely.
Like a beat-up old, what do they call it, Crown Vic, don't they? The old model of car that the 1970s police cars were built on. So it's a very beautiful thing with that great big speaker attached by rope onto the top.
Oh, I love
they crashed
concept.
More cars in that film than any movie of all time, I think.
What, even more than the Cannonball Run?
Yeah.
Hey, that would be another good one, wouldn't it? Do you remember the Lamborghini from the Cannonball Run?
Yeah.
The black Lamborghini. Actually, isn't it interesting? When you actually think about it, you know, there's so much room still left in something like Skeletric to look backwards. Obviously, the great thing about Skeletrics as well, though, Pete, it looks forwards as well. So you've now got the kind of lane change, and there's all the electronic timing circuits. The digital track came out. Well, it was
they
a few
do have
years
some,
back now.
They've got some great tech that they've tried to introduce over the years, but people still revert back to the figure a bit, just bigger and bigger figure of eights and wider tracks.
Yeah,
I think what people are really investing their time in when they get a Skeletric set is replicating the stands. Not just from F1 tracks, for example, but just their hometown and just having a Skeletric track running around their hometown some local landmarks. And people are investing in that because then you're model building, you're Skeletric-ing, that's a word.
Yeah, that is a new word.
Is there a MotoGP for Skeletric?
I believe there is.
I was going to say.
There are certainly motorbikes,
So if you haven't got space for a Skeletric track in your house, or someone keeps on taking it down, like I seem to remember happened in our house when we were growing up. What else you got?
So for much less room, that is, I'm going to stick with the retro vibe. I'm going to go with Optimus Prime. So we had the 40-year anniversary this year of Transformers with the new animated film launch, which has done really well. There's a robots company called Robosen. Who released a number of... They've got a Grimlock and Optimus Prime. They've just released their Buzz Lightyear, but I brought along Optimus Prime here. So he's connected via Bluetooth to the dedicated app. So we're in just truck remote control mode. It's a fairly hefty unit. The quality is unmatched, in my opinion, for any Transformers toy that's out there. This one, I think inside there are 32 servo motors, 82 microprocessors, which lead to many different actions. One of my favourite being the full transformation.
Okay, so look,
Optimus Prime
is now transforming before our eyes,
OP.
Standing up from a robot, from a truck into a robot on the desk of the podcast studio. That is absolutely amazing.
I've owned this for over a year since they first came out.
Yeah.
It's the most money I've ever spent on a toy. And it does It does many, many things. You can give it voice commands. It can fight lots of actions. You can pre-program it.
God,
I've only ever got round to making it transform up and down. I marvel at that.
I think that's
daily.
That's the showstopper, though, isn't it?
You can see why kids or adults would be obsessed with this.
Yeah.
And it's just it's beautiful, isn't it?
Wow.
It's commanding, actually.
It's just transforming now from robot back into truck. Remarkably, without falling off the table. Round of applause.
Yeah, well done. Pete,
that was really good.
Love that.
What's it called again?
This is RoboSens Optimus Prime Elite.
Great. Do you mind me asking, sense of retail price sort of area?
Sense of area is between $750 and $850.
Wow, so this is a serious
piece
of
kit.
Yeah,
there are also, you can buy accessories, which is a trailer with also a smaller truck that comes out of the back. the new Buzz Lightyear is worth a look, which has been priced down to about $500. And that's a fully animated Buzz Lightyear face with all the sounds from these catchphrases.
All from RoboSen. And all of that same really solid build quality. It's a quality piece of kit, this.
It's the quality of the kit when you touch it and you have it in motion. It doesn't look plastic, but when you pick it up, it's a hefty unit.
Yeah,
no
it
doubt.
Is heavy.
It's a really good piece of kit.
So that's obviously high end.
Yes.
Can we maybe go to the other end of the scale and pick something that's a little bit more maybe stocking filler-esque? For
definitely.
Your friend that's into something particular, maybe.
So I'm still with four wheels, if you don't mind.
I'm picking up
some stuff that's got a limited amount of tech, but there's a lot of tech and thought gone into it. And we're down Retro Road again. And why wouldn't we be? Jurassic Park, the famous Jeep, made out of diecast from Jada Toys. They make a ton of. They make the
Those are
the Ecto-1 from Ghostbusters. They've got Starsky and Hutch's car, but this one has just got so much detail in it, and just feels sturdy. It's a fantastic stocking filler. It will fill the stocking. It's not particularly cheap, but they're really well made, and it's got space inside to make it possibly the best pen holder you've ever had on your desk.
Is this the one that the guy who nicks off with the kind of prototype DNA for dinosaurs and tries to sell it, and then he has a crash and he eventually... Well, I won't say what happens.
I think it is that guy.
That's the one. It's beautiful. It's a really chunky, beautiful thing. Very detailed, metal, cold to the touch, solid. I like it.
I just feel like these things you're just getting your money's worth. There are lots of toy cars out there. They've always been very popular across genders. But the quality that people are putting into them to make them collectible for kidults, but that is completely playable with. If you give it a skim along the floor, that'll go a long way.
Yeah,
what sort of price is it?
It's about 25, 26
that's
quid.
Good value, that.
Okay.
But that's going to go forever. You know, like that thrown around toy that you've had since a kid that you might find in a box in the attic at your parents' house.
And it just looks better.
That's
going
to
be.
That's exactly that. That's where we've gone back to. You know, after having a decade of plastic stuff that will fall off, it goes in the bin. It's not landfill. That's not landfill. That is a great bit of kit.
And this is this is the detail, I think, in this is what's exceptional of this Jurassic Park Jeep, isn't it? And it would sit really nicely on your shelf in the back of a podcast.
No, it really would. I was thinking
if you've got a meeting or something, it looks quite cool on the desk. Pete, I've just picked this up. It says plus on the little case. It looks like a travel case.
Yeah, loving plus. So a new Danish construction toy company.
Right.
Who've done very well.
Not Lego, then.
Not Lego. They come in little... They're akin to jigsaw-esque pieces, I guess. But they piece together wonderfully to create pretty much, endless.
So what Susie's got there is a kind of white tray.
Yep.
And then all these tiny pieces that are kind of like sort of micro-sized Lego, but very different, not blocks, more sort of... I don't know how you'd explain them, like helix.
They're
type
a bit like
shapes.
Mini pixels. You can create some wonderful pixelated,
lots of different colors.
Imagery. They do, and they come with. There are instructions, and they do have set sets, like many Lego sets do have. There's
so
a
you
pre-build
can copy
in there.
Something,
but plus really do just kind of they more want you to just do your own thing, and this is the travel box, which is just a nice carry-around thing. It's quite cathartic as well, just putting these things together. You're not really making anything sometimes. You might try to put your name together or create some weird-looking animal.
Yeah,
but it's quite chilling.
It's very abstract and quite...
Yeah, abstract, yeah.
quite open as a play experience.
Also, I can imagine as a travel set for a teenager to be sitting in the back of the car instead of sitting looking at a screen all the time, just to use your imagination, use your hands and play with something that seemingly is old-fashioned but actually never really goes out of fashion. No. You know, trying to build something for yourself. It's quite a nice thought process, that, isn't it?
No, it's lovely. I think it's a really, really
I think you've really hit the nail on the head there, Susie. For me, it's like that with my 14-year-old daughter was just happened to be out as we were having after dinner. We'd moved this place away and I just took that set out. And shall I take this and show the guys next week? And we, as we were talking, we found ourselves just piecing the things together and all of a sudden we'd just built some random tower and it'd taken us 15 minutes. But we'd had a chat about what we were doing and
I
what
think
she'd
that's
been
really
doing.
Cool.
A conversation about school, a conversation about something completely randomly different, but we were building at the same time and I loved that.
It's the togetherness, isn't it, rather than being isolated watching
so
something.
It's funny, you've given me a little nudge there. This wasn't meant to be a way of joining to another piece of tech that I can see you've got in your collection, which is Gravitrax. And the reason I mention that, if you'd like to grab that, Pete, is that my 14-year-old, actually, he's kind of our baby. I know that sounds silly, but he's like, we're holding on to this final youngster.
It's heavy.
Oh, my goodness, it is. Because I've got a 19-year-old and a 17-year-old. So he's still quite young. And actually, one of the things that he does is Gravitrax. He still does it. So he's got the Xbox. He's got all that sort of digital stuff. But he likes to build the Gravitrax because he's got quite an engineering inventor's mind. But I noticed this is a special one. Could you explain? I'm holding up a box of Gravitrax. Yeah,
so this is brand new for this year. So Gravitrax launched as a product range.
Tell us what it is for people that don't know.
So it's a very much a boosted marble run set.
Yeah, so you build structures.
You build structures.
Marble runs and you send balls down the run.
Yeah, and they've got lots of accessories so it'll speed the ball up or it'll twist the ball round or it'll throw it across a little gap or do various things. But the Star Wars set has those accessories but with a Death Star and an X-Wing fighter placed around the place. And the base set on which you build the marble run is kind of Death Star or Tatooine.
No, themed. I love it. And so it's got things like little magnetic traps. And if you send a ball down this one, it hits this and then it swings a pendulum and that hits another set and it carries on. A bit like dominoes, but in marble form, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm looking at the box here. Obviously, Gravitrax Star Wars Death Star, the action set. It's from years 8 to 99, which I absolutely love.
That's great.
So if you're 100, you can't play with this because you're too old, which is a bit ridiculous.
It's funny.
It looks beautiful. Pete.
People have jumped on this the marble run thing, and I do think 2024, bizarrely for me, has been the in the world of toys has been the year of the it's been the year of the marble of the ball bearing,
isn't it funny?
So we bought I got another set, which is a build your own pinball kit. There's a company called Paper Engine, and they a bunch of paper engineers who notoriously make pop-up books. They make blinding ones, but they started to make toys. One of the first ones was a build your own mini pinball machine out of cardboard and you put the ball bearing in and it offers a decent amount of play for its £20 price tag. And it's a nice thing to build. So you get the collaborative bit doing it together and then you get the play aspect afterwards. And it's quite shelf worthy. So left out, it can sit alongside your nice Candylag cart.
I believe you might have an assembled version to show us. You're allowed to leave the table.
I 100% do.
Before you leave the table, though, can I just ask you the price for the Gravitrax Star Wars Death Star?
The full set is around £120, I believe.
I think I might have to have one.
But that is a weighty. I think that's the weightiest unit I brought along today.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, this is great, isn't it? It's like Christmas morning.
This is like our version of Christmas.
So Pete's now left for those listening, he's left the table. He's rummaging around in a series of boxes that he's had delivered previously.
I always find Christmas morning a little bit disappointing because I never get anything that I'd really like.
So here's the pinball machine fully completed.
Oh, can you pass it to me? Can I have a look?
That's amazing. It's so much bigger than the box.
Oh. So I'm holding it now and it's the size of two cereal boxes, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Double the depth. And you've got your bumpers here at the bottom. Is that what they're called?
I guess so. I'm not a pinball.
So the plunger is the one that pings the marble out to release it.
Where's
and then the paddles are the ones that flip the ball back up into play.
Can I have a ball, please? Oh. I need to do it. So where do I put the ball down there?
Yeah.
Okay, and then I just pull the plunger and it goes.
Oh, yeah.
I need to do it flat. Oh,
I'll help you. Thank you. Oh, well done, Sue.
The flippers.
That's great. Isn't that clever? Oh. Hey, it's so good. What Susie's doing...
I was doing the flippers wrong. I'm going to do
it again. Flipping and launching an actual metal ball around a cardboard pinball machine, which actually is full colour and looks utterly amazing.
Oh, do you know what? This is great. Because just the fact that you make it and then play with it, I love it.
Yeah, so the other one along those lines, what else did they make? You remember the old labyrinth where you had to, it was a table where you had to guide a ball through a maze by tilting the table? They make a labyrinth version in cardboard, which is also fun.
I'm holding up the pinball so that you can see it. If you're one of our listeners, you should probably check out the video version of the podcast because this is
colourful,
quite something.
It's very, really colourful, isn't it?
It's beautifully designed.
Yeah, it's great. And it's great just to have on a coffee table because people will do what I just did and just have a couple of goes.
Yeah.
Brings out, you know, a little bit of a smile for the day, doesn't it? A bit of fun.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thanks, Pete. Good effort. Thank you so
much. Just before you go, though, Pete, is there anything you want to add in terms of anything that's coming up that we should keep our eye on or that we should be looking for this Christmas that perhaps you couldn't get your hands on?
I think I mentioned Buzz Lightyear, which has completely been a sellout. That was one of my favourite toys of the year. I think I'm certainly keeping an eye out for Scalextric because they've had a really extraordinary year or two, and I think they'll be bringing some more track innovation next year. Jason did mention that they had lap counters and lane changing stuff, but I think we're going to maybe see some return of the retro where bridges used to move up and down so you couldn't get past and twists and turns. We're going to see a little bit more of that, but with some tech introduced. So we're going to take... The toy companies are taking some steps back in time, but improving the toys.
Yeah, like with technology.
Toys that we recognise, but adding some really special tech. So they're two things that I'm really looking out for. Just so you know, all of this stuff is mine.
It's a fantastic array. And we get the hint.
I'm glad you stated that.
The fact that you said that Buzz Lightyear is a massive seller this year really fills me with so much warmth.
Add in something about the Buzz Lightyear unit, which is retails about 500 quid, is it comes with the word Andy on the bottom of his boot, clearly, but it comes with a spare foot so you can write your own name on it.
No, it
doesn't.
Yeah. Although I did say the stuff was mine. Oh, I forgot to say, Susie, would you mind if we gifted Gravitrax the Death Star kit so you can take it home and enjoy it?
Susie, you said no one ever gets anything for Christmas.
Oh, my goodness me.
Merry Christmas, Susie.
Merry Christmas, Susie.
What? Is this a joke?
No.
Something's going to happen and I'm going to have to give it you back. That's so... It's really heavy.
I love the image of Susie curled up on the... Yeah, on the
carpet. I love Star Wars. I cannot wait. I cannot wait to put this together. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
That's so kind of you.
Pete, as always, really inspiring. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me along.
Right, time now for our gadget of interest. And this really is one for Android lovers. Jason's already picked it up. He's already grabbed it, which says a lot. It's the Samsung Galaxy Tab S10 Ultra. And we've got the cellular version here for 5G. And it comes with a pen.
This.
It's so beautiful, honestly. It comes with a pen. So if you're doing a graphic design, it's one for you. And I think it's fair to say that it's great for entertainment, but also, you know, for pros to use. Look at him, he's already immersed in it.
It is absolutely beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I tell you, the thing I'm struck by straight away is the screen. Have you got some spec for us?
Well,
while you find the spec, can I just tell you about... Yeah, no, I'll just tell you this. It's really super wide.
It's 14.6 inches super AMOLED.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's the widescreen format. It looks to me like 1610. It's like cinema scope from a 60s movie. It's a beautiful, massively wide screen. It's not just the size of the whole thing. It's the fact that it's wider than, say, the iPad, for example.
It's got a resolution, the screen, of 1848 by 2960.
Wow.
Offering a pixel density of 239 ppi.
I don't know what that means, but
it's really bright.
Is it AMOLED, isn't it?
Yes, it's AMOLED,
So it's really vibrant. It's got great contrast. It's easy on the eyes. It's got a kind of, I would say, I think it's got an, it's not reflexive, but it doesn't reflect in a distracting way, which I really like.
Yep. cameras wise,
oh yeah,
a 13 megapixel like? Primary camera and an 8 megapixel ultra wide camera. For selfies, it features dual 12 megapixel front cameras, and all the cameras support 4K video recording except for the ultra wide rear camera.
I just can't get over the width of it. I'm sorry, but look, when I'm relaxing, right, which sometimes I do.
I can't imagine it, but go on.
And I want to watch a movie, right? This is what I want to watch it on. I love the format of the screen that they've gone for. They've tried to distinguish themselves. They've said, okay, so what Apple are doing, okay, is pretty good, and they've got their market. What can we do that's a bit different? And they've gone for this wider format. And I'm absolutely seduced by it. Not only that, the thinness. I mean, look at it, Suze.
Yeah, it's very, very slim. Good battery life as well, so it lasts you throughout the day for all your movies that you'll be watching.
Yeah, like, if I only had time to watch movies all day, I'd love that.
Those days. So if you're an Android fan and you're in the market, perhaps for Christmas, for a new tablet.
Yeah, or maybe even a laptop replacement, because it's in that territory.
Yeah, you can have the keyboard with it.
And underneath this rather gorgeous bonnet, which looks, well, it's a kind of gunmetal grey, Suze, isn't it? Yeah. It's like off a, I don't know, a Pagani or a hypercar. It's very seductive. It's some serious horsepower, which you need for all that preemptive multitasking. So you can have multiple apps open, you can share the screen, you can game on it as well as your super high quality, high resolution movie experience.
Exactly. So, dear Android fans, if you are a graphic designer or indeed just want it for your entertainment or for work, use it as a desktop, you might want to have a look. You might be in the line for a Samsung Galaxy Tab S10 Ultra.
Love it.
This Christmas time. Hint, hint.
Merry Christmas to me.
Merry Christmas to me.
No, I'm for me.
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 Or you. That's it for another episode of the Gadget Show podcast. And I think this week we've covered some amazing and some sexy tech.
It's been super sexy this week. Before we sign off, though, a big shout out to our partners, JBL Tour Pro 3s, as modelled by the lovely Suze, earbuds that combine impressive sound quality with cutting-edge features. Thanks, guys. Catch us next week for more gadgets, tech trends and everything in between.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Suze was presented by Jason Bradbury and Suze Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.